You are now tuned in to the Jags Den Podcast, the official podcast of the Jaguars Wire, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group, and also the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Jags Den Podcast, aka the flagship podcast for the Jaguars Wire, which is brought to you by USA Today. That's jaguarswire.usatoday.com. Of course, I am your host and managing editor of the Jaguars Wire, James Johnson, aka sportsgrind_done, as you all know me on Twitter. And of course, you can feel free to follow our various Twitter handles, the podcast at Jags Den Podcast, of course, at the Jaguars Wire for the Jaguars Wire. And of course, you can also follow my comrades who weren't able to join me today. The usual host, Phil Smith, at Phil the Filipino, and Jacob DeLawrence, who also contributes with the Jaguars Wire. That's at _Jadella. So, all of that said, you can feel free to follow this episode and our archived episodes on iTunes. Most notably, feel free to go on there and rate, comment, subscribe, share with everybody this, that, and the other, because of course, that's the most popular podcast interface out there. And, you know, that'll help us climb the ranks up there as the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves. You can also follow us on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and as well as Radio Public, Deezer. We're also on Audio Boom with our comrades in general, the Wire sites. You can feel free to check them out as well under the USA Today Network. And you can also feel free to follow us on Audio Boom. We're on there with our USA Today comrades. We basically have a whole network of podcasts on there for each team, each Wire site, and probably for the Touchdown Wire and Draft Wire as well. So feel free to check that out. And, you know, check out our comrades as well with the USA Today Wire site. So all of that said, we're going to get right into the topics at hand for today's show. And first, we're going to start with, of course, I mean, with it being it's actually Saturday afternoon, 1:32 p.m., July the 30th or July the 20th, excuse me. So that means training camp is on the horizon. It was announced earlier in the week that 7 training camp days will be available to the public. And those 7 days, of course, are the first 7 days of training camp. Those being, I'm pulling them up right now, Thursday, the upcoming Thursday, which is July 25th. Friday, July the 26th, Saturday, July the 27th. However, that date is only available to, of course, the media, but the season ticket holders as well. So that's a season ticket holder exclusive. Again, that's Saturday the 27th for those of you who have season tickets, want to check out the team. And then they'll continue to practice on Sunday, July the 28th. That'll be available to the public. They'll be off Monday. And then to wrap it up, they'll be available to the public on Tuesday, July the 30th, Wednesday, July the 31st, and Thursday, August the 1st. So, again, those 7 dates are pretty much the first 7 dates of training camp. As usual, you know, the Jaguars will be out there doing their thing and practicing hard, and also, you know, giving the fans a show and interacting with the fans as well, as they typically always do. And in other news or other quick hits we got here, the Jaguars signed supplemental draft prospect Marcus Sims from West Virginia University as an undrafted free agent. As all, most know, Sims entered the supplemental draft when undrafted. The Jaguars presented him with the undrafted deal that obviously he couldn't pass up, or he probably felt that, you know, he had a better chance to make the Jazz roster as opposed to some of the other deals he got out there. And yeah, I mean, they probably put some incentives in the deal too to kind of sway him. So that being said, he will be training with the Jaguars for training camp, and to make room for that transaction, they waived slash injured undrafted receiver Dedrick Snelson of Central Florida. And to my knowledge, he cleared waivers, so he'll revert back to their IR list. So, you know, he can join the team later down the road. So, yep, that put the team at 90 men. Sims, 21 years of age. Like I said, went undrafted in the supplemental draft process. They checked him out at his pro day. Obviously, they liked what they saw out of him. It was several other teams, actually, that I reported on the Jaguars wire. I think 10 or upwards or somewhere around that. So, you know, he was a guy that a lot of people checked out. 5'11", 188 pounds, a little bit of smaller frame, if you will. But, you know, we've seen smaller receivers flourish, especially with the Jaguars, most notably DeeDee Westbrook, who's roughly, you know, the same size, 6 foot zero, roughly. You know, he's probably 200, probably under that, to be honest with you. That being said, you know, he was arguably the best receiver for the Jaguars. There's, well, no argument in it. He was the best receiver for the Jags last year. So as for his statistics, Sims hauled in 46 receptions for 699 yards and 2 touchdowns last season, which was 2018. He finished his collegiate career with a total of 87 catches for 1,457 yards and had 8 touchdowns to his career. He also returned punts and returned kicks, racked up just under 1,000 yards as a kick returner. And as a punt returner, he had 157 yards, no touchdowns to his name. But that's worth noting because, you know, probably what you're looking at Sims is the guy that the Jaguars probably will be looking at as one of those back end receivers, maybe at best, you know, if he can make the roster as five or as a number six guy alongside Terrell Pryor. But, you know, when you're at that part or on that that back end of the receiver depth chart, typically what teams are looking for is, you know, a guy that could play special teams, return punts, return kicks, you know, be a gunner, make some tackles on special teams. So I think ultimately, you know, that explains them picking up Sims. We'll see how he performs and how he fares at training camp. As, you know, me and Phil, we've already discussed that we do want to be in attendance. That was another thing I forgot to mention when I was talking training camp. But me and Phil are looking at going to some dates. I think for me, I'll probably go on that Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So those last 3 days, I would like to go on the opening date, you know, and provide y'all with some opening date content or at least some live opening day content. From Twitter or, you know, whatever handles, you know, all our social media handles in general. But, yeah, it's looking like me and Phil will be going on that Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That being said, be on the lookout on the Jaguars Wire for content on training camp as it is a mere, 6 days away now. And so, yeah, we're looking at under a week. And regardless as to, you know, if we're there live on the set with the team or not, we'll have plenty of content on training camp on the Jaguars Wire. Again, that's jaguarswire.usatoday.com. We'll have plenty of that on the web and on social media and what have you. Also, I mean, when you look back at mini camp and OTAs, you know, we did a pretty good job with giving you coverage every day. During that process, we gave you all the rundowns for every session in terms of OTAs. Those were well received, so we would like to continue something like that for training camp and keep giving you all that quality content that you all have been looking for on the web concerning the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the last quick hit, Lot J, Lenny Curry, Mayor Curry, came out to say, and this was last week, that they are verbally close to making an agreement on Lot J. As most are aware, you know, Shad Khan, this was something that he made a big deal of. And I mean, you know, a lot of people have been excited about it and wanting to see it come into fruition. A $500 million project in totality. Of course, you would think, I mean, especially Jacksonville, they're not going to pour all of that into it immediately. They'll do it in phases, you know, in steps. But basically what they want to do is just, you know, turn Lot J into a area with a hotel. There's going to be residential areas. There's going to be an office building. There also will be a what's looking like will be what a quote unquote live venue And what those are is, you know, basically, think of it as the landing, you know, a place where people can converse during the game and whatnot, with restaurants and, you know, shops and outlets and whatnot. That type of deal. For those of you who have been to the Atlanta Braves Stadium, their new one, at least, or should I say ballpark, it's something like that. Basically, the same company that built the surrounding to that stadium, Cordish Companies, they are the ones working with the Jaguars on this situation. So think some along the lines of that, since it's the same company that they're working with, some along the lines of what the St. Louis Rams have surrounding their ballpark, and the Texas Rangers, who Cordish Companies have worked with them too. So, you know, basically it's just something to make Jacksonville, or at least the stadium, TIAA Bank, feel a popping spot 24/7, even basically when, you know, there's no football activity going on. And kind of like, you know, what they're doing with Daly's Place, just, you know, adding more activity alongside Daly's Place is look like what Shad Khan is trying to do here. So we'll monitor that throughout the process, and we'll see where they at with the city council and all of that. You know, that typically it's not the easiest process to get done, especially for a $500 million process. But again, like I said, they'll probably do it in phases, and, you know, they'll put X amount of dollars to the first phase and then go on from there. So, I mean, that's a good thing to see. As you know, as I said, with the Buffalo Bills situation in the last podcast, you know, you like to see the owner investing more money into the city. Therefore, you know, when it comes time to renew this lease, and the Jaguars are coming up on that time, the Buffalo Bills are going through that right now. But when they wrap their situation up, figure out their stadium situation, and figure out their lease situation, the league is going to turn to us, you know, and because the Jaguars lease, I think, is up in roughly 2029 or something. So I think we're kind of next on that list. Of course, they always have associated us with relocation talks, wrongfully so anyway. And, you know, the more projects that Shad Khan does, like Lot J, and entrench his money and himself into the city, the better for the longevity of the Jacksonville Jaguars and their, you know, their long term viability in the city of Jacksonville. So that was that on the quick hits. We will get right into the topics at hand. Really only have two topics to discuss this time around. We're going to talk about my personal optimism on the Jaguars offense, which is weird because typically I'm the one that's pessimistic on the Jaguars, while others are the ones that are, you know, more optimistic. So it's kind of vice versa this year. The fans aren't so much excited about the offense and optimistic about the offense as I am. But we're going to talk about exactly why they should be, or they should be at least, you know, a little bit more optimistic when looking at this Jaguars offense. We'll also talk some Madden ratings. Of course, as you all know, Madden 20 will be out soon. The ratings came out earlier this week. Jaguars were rated a 79 overall. Is that too high or too low for them? You know, we'll talk about that in today's show. And we'll also look at the X factor abilities that the individual players were given. The Jags have two players with X factor abilities on their team. And we'll talk about individual player ratings as well. So all of that said, let's get right into it with the Jags offense. As I said, you know, a lot of the fans, especially just looking at the feedback we've been getting on social media and what have you, especially on the Facebook page, which is probably one of our most popping social media pages. But a lot of people just don't seem high on the Jags offense. And I think I'll start by saying this. I think a lot of it is, and it's not an issue that it is this way, but I think a lot of people were Blake Bortles stans that are Jaguar fans, and it's still not sitting well that, you know, they let him go. So that might be part of the pessimism or the pessimistic side to this, why people aren't high on the Jaguars offense. And another thing that we keep seeing is basically a lot of the fans have come out to say, hey, you know, we don't have a marquee receiver. Marquise Lee, he's going to miss, what, 2 weeks in the training camp. Don't really have that guy, even with Marquise Lee in the equation. You know, he's not a guy we would exactly call a number one. So, you know, there's that as well. So, I mean, I could see why. And then, you know, they're coming off an off season last year where, you know, the offense just looked putrid. But That being said, the reason I'm personally optimistic on this team is, of course, and I mean, a lot of people are well aware of this, is for one, you know, personally, I've always thought, and I mean, I think Jacob and Phil would agree with me here, that Blake Bortles was a part of the problem for the offense as opposed to some others. And I mean, there's some others that agree with us too as well, and especially in the media realm. So that being said, you know, albeit we don't know how much of an upgrade Nick Foles is, and I wasn't the highest on paying him what we did, although, you know, there's much worse contracts out there to pay a quarterback. We're seeing what they're making by the year, and it just keeps inflating at a crazy rate. So they could have paid him much more. It could have been much worse. You know, they could be more. They could have tied more cap into him. So I guess I shouldn't complain from that perspective. But that being said, though, again, on Nick Foles, don't know exactly how much of an upgrade he is over Blake Bortles. But that being said, the slightest of an upgrade over Blake Bortles, in addition to what we already have with this offense, or should I say the defense, and you know, the Jaguars do have weapons on offense. You know, they are, you know, if Nick Foles is what we saw, what, the past two postseasons, and the late in the regular season, the past two late regular seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, they should be able to contend for the playoffs. Not only that, but, you know, they should be viewed as Super Bowl contenders if that is the Nick Foles that they're getting indeed. So, you know, not the highest on Nick Foles, not the biggest fan of Nick Foles, but what I saw from him late in the regular season, late in the postseason, it was impressive nonetheless. And I think he does have talent, and I think he is an upgrade over Blake Bortles. And, you know, that in itself really helps this team. So, you know, there's that. There also is the fact that, again, and most of us are well aware of this, that the offensive line is coming back 100%. That didn't really help last year's issues. You know, of course, they had four guys ultimately in terms of the starters going on IR at the end of the day. It was A.J. Cann, who was the lone standing member of the starting five offensive linemen, who was the only guy that didn't go on IR. So you had Andrew Norwell, Linder, Jeremy Parnell went on IR, and Cam Robinson. So all of those guys are back. Cam Robinson will be late into training camp, just like Marquise Lee will, according to reports. So we're thinking, what, like 2 weeks in the training camp. But, you know, you don't want to rush him as he recovers from ACL surgery. As we all know, he sustained an injury week two against the New England Patriots. You know, that was from that point on, you know, he was out for the season. So he'll be coming back. Brandon Linder and Andrew Norwell coming back. We kind of lost them mid-season. You know, arguably the two best offensive linemen. Ain't no arguably in it. They are the two best offensive linemen in on the Jaguars roster. So they'll be back. That certainly has to help. Although, you know, they will be kind of using new schematics under John DeFilippo, probably will be using some zone blocking there. And most will argue they might not be a fit for that. So, you know, there's that to worry about. But in terms of health, the offensive line will be back. And again, like, that really didn't help to have basically four backups in front of Blake Bortles. And as I said, Blake Bortles already was an inconsistent quarterback as it was. He already, with a healthy offensive line, I guess I would say he wasn't the guy, in my honest opinion. I mean, we saw the inconsistency even in 2017, the year that got him the contract. You know, again, I've said this on the radio, I said it on this podcast, on the airwaves of the public airwaves, but I mean, you look at 2017, he was inconsistent then, the year that got him paid. You know, one moment he was in Jacksonville struggling to put up so much as a first down against the Tennessee Titans and put up points or just generate any offense. Then the next week they go to London, he drops 44. So that was kind of just hard to for the staff to just game plan around, because they never knew what player they were going to get. So, like, you know, if you're Nate Hackett, and I feel a lot of, you know, Nate Hackett getting fired is on Blake Bortles, and that inconsistency that he couldn't game plan for, you know, that certainly probably didn't help Nate Hackett's job. But if you're him and you're wondering week in and week out, which Blake am I going to get so I can even get to make a game plan, you know, that could cause a problem in itself. But, you know, that's neither here nor neither there. But as I was saying, you know, you add in all of those factors, you know, the offensive line pretty much wiped out. You have a quarterback that isn't the answer, even with the offensive line, the starting offensive line. You have a quarterback that isn't answered behind those backups, and you know you're just in a world of trouble at that point. And I mean, it reared his head, it showed. And then also, yeah, of course, Leonard Fournette missed half of the season. So, you know, he's the offense's number one weapon. Previously in 2017, they led the league in rushing. So that also didn't help as well. So all of those guys are coming back. The offensive line, Leonard Fournette is back, albeit, you know, history says Leonard Fournette isn't going to play a whole season, but at least they'll have him to open the season. You know, they'll have a clean slate. They'll have all of their guys back in front of Nick Foles. So Nick Foles will have better circumstances than Blake Bortles ended the season with, so to speak. So that's a positive. And like I said, I think one of the things with the fans is, especially they look at the receiving core, they don't see a Nuke Hopkins, or, you know, they don't see one of these number one guys, Antonio Brown or Juju Smith-Schuster in the group. And that concerns them, and rightfully so. I can understand that. But I mean, in my opinion, I'm a little bit more higher on the receiving core than others, because I know when you look at it, so they have D.D. Westbrook, who was no slouch last year. Okay, he absolutely decimated teams from the slot, although I guess you could say they were coming from behind in a lot of games. But, you know, he had a lot of success from the slot. And D.D. Westbrook is a guy that Jazz got in the fourth round, but, you know, he really was a first round talent, and it's showing, in my opinion. Like, it's no coincidence that he was their best receiver last year. So you got a guy in D.D. Westbrook who just dominated from the slot, and who Doug Farrar of Touchdown Wire, my comrade, basically put in an article that he was, what, the 11th best slot receiver in football. So, you know, you got a guy that, you know, that's a great weapon for Nick Foles to come into this equation and have. And he's coming off of that year where he, you know, he had a good year. So the momentum is certainly there. So you have him leading the way for the receiving core, even without Marquise Lee. So there's that, a guy that was, you know, drafted in the fourth round, that has first round talent, who's only going to get better helping out Nick Foles. So you got that coming into the mix. You have DJ Chark, who, I get it, a lot of people weren't high on him. He struggled in his rookie season, but like, really, can you hold that against him? Like, how many receivers, you know, in their rookie season come out and light it up exactly? Albeit, you know, it was a little underwhelming for him, and he, you know, he had a lot of issues going on. It was the injury. There were also the drops, the fumbles. He had penalties. But that's just a rookie being a rookie. And a rookie, especially in his situation where the offense is decimated with injuries, just trying to do too much and step to the plate and be a playmaker. That's all that was. He was just trying to live up to his second round status, which a lot of people, you know, Dave Caldwell came out to say they drafted, or they graded him as a first round pick. So that was a guy that was just trying to do too much. But when you look at DJ Chark, you know, the signs are there that DJ Chark can be good. He did have moments in the regular season where he flashed. Most notably, you know, it was the deep ball from Kansas City that he got. I think he had like two moments like that, but he showed up as a deep threat for the team, which is what the team is expecting of him. You know, when he lives up to his potential, they think he can be a guy that can get them huge chunks of yardage. And you look at him as a player in terms of practice, like the signs were there in practice. He killed it last year in training camp with Cody Kessler. I mean, that in itself is that's kind of crazy to say. Like, the guy was out there lighting up with the backup quarterback who couldn't even really move the ball in the regular season. So he was a guy that you could argue was probably maybe the MVP of training camp last season. And it's translating to this offseason in the summer and minicamp, OTAs. You can argue that DJ Chark was the MVP of that phase. And it wouldn't surprise me if he kills it in training camp as well, continues where he left off and start connecting with Nick Foles and be the guy that, you know, we look at in training camp and be like, hey, this guy balled out this whole summer. So, I mean, that in itself, like, is alarming to me. That says that, you know, he has shown the ability. It's kind of like DeAndre Hopkins. He's shown the ability to adapt to whatever quarterback you put in front of him, essentially, which is a great trait to have. I'm not saying he's DeAndre Hopkins, but that trait in itself is a great trait to have, that shows the degree of talent this young man has, in my opinion, personally. And I think DJ Chark could explode onto the scene, especially with better quarterback play, as I said, behind center. I think he could explode onto the scene in 2019. So I'm a little bit higher on him than some others. And for crying out loud, once again, like I said, he was drafted in the second round. So, I mean, clearly the talent is there. So there was also Chris Conley, who you can argue, you know, looked like probably he could be the MVP as well, just like Chart was of this summer. And again, I get it. You don't have to tell me that there weren't any pads on and this, that, and the other. I'm a journalist of, 8 years? I know we got to see what this team can do with the pads when the pads go on. But all I'm saying is, you know, some of the things we saw in summer definitely could translate to when the pads go on, because simply put, a lot of it was tied to probably, you know, inconsistency at the quarterback. You know, now you get somebody that throws a consistent ball, that has good ball placement, and all of a sudden the receivers, I mean, it's not a shocker that all of a sudden the receivers are starting to flash. You know, now that the ball placement is better, there's consistency at the quarterback, this, that, and the other. And then you even hear a guy like A.J. Boye admit that, hey, like, you know, we haven't been able as DBs to make the same plays on the ball that we previously had. And A.J. Boye, although he struggled a little bit last year, he dropped off a little bit, he's still no slouch, make no mistake about it. He's still one of the league's best corners. So you have him come out and say, like, hey, this receiving core and this offense and Nick Foles, you know, these guys are putting it on us, basically, in a roundabout way, is what he said. I mean, and in fact, they've left concerns, the receivers and Nick Foles have, that the Jaguars may need to go pick up a guy like, say, Eric Berry to boost the secondary, at least that the safety spot, because they're a little young back there with Gerard Wilson and Ronnie Harrison. So, you know, basically the receivers beat up on them so bad to the point where people have concerns that the Jaguars may need to add a safety before training camp begins. Whether that's, like I said, I guess Glover Quinn, he retired, according to Phil. He told me that. I missed that in the news. But, you know, like a, you know, they might, people are saying they might need a Eric Berry or Trey Boston from, I think that's the young man's name, from Arizona. So that being said, you know, these guys have the momentum going into training camp, and we'll see if that ultimately translates. But one last thing that has me a little bit optimistic on this receiving core, at least more optimistic than others, is the fact that, you know, while the Jaguars front office has its flaws, and we've lit into them on the Jaguars Wire, I mean, we call it as it is, that front office has struggled, you know, and there's some things that they've done, and they've made some costly mistakes. That being said, one thing that I don't think we can question is their ability to scout receivers. I mean, you look at Dave Caldwell's history with receivers, even when he was with Atlanta. You know, he was the guy that reportedly, according to reports, put together and compiled the trade to get Julio Jones. You would think, you know, as Thomas Dimitroff's second man, he did a lot of the scouting on Julio Jones as well. So this man knows receivers because, I mean, clearly, as we all know, Julio Jones is a top 1, 2, or 3 receiver, however you view him. Most would even say top, the number one. But, I mean, Julio Jones is killing the league. So you look at that, and that just shows that Dave, I mean, and, like, it's not like Julio Jones was this talent that you obviously couldn't see would be good in the NFL, I guess. I mean, it was obvious that he was going to be a star, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But you also look at, like, Allen Robinson, who, I mean, albeit Dave Caldwell didn't do what was necessary to keep him in Jacksonville, he did scout him and bring him onto this team, and he translated. Allen Robinson translated into a very good receiver, probably can be a good receiver with the Bears as well. So all I'm saying is, while he didn't keep Allen Robinson, he at least had the eye and the talent and the you know, the ability as a scout to see that he would be a good receiver. So nonetheless, I mean, the Jaguars haven't really struggled with finding receivers under Dave Caldwell. They've had struggles everywhere else. But at the receiver spot, that's not really an area I'm concerned about, you know, his knowledge of, because he's proven, at least at that position, to have a good track record with it. He got Allen Hurns as an undrafted guy. You know, that was a steal, a diamond in the rough right there. So that is one area I won't question Dave Caldwell in, as well as I won't question Tom Coughlin, who I've been critical of, especially in the front office. But when you look at Tom Coughlin's track record with receivers, back in the day, you know, when he was running things with the Jaguars as the GM and as the coach, he brought in Keenan, brought in Jimmy, and he had the eye to scout those guys, you know, as free agents. and bring them into the, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars organization and make, I mean, no doubt what nobody would doubt is the best receiving tandem in the franchise's history. So you look at that. He has a good track record with bringing him in as a GM. He has a good track record of coaching him. Look at what he did with the Giants. Hakeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, Mario Manningham. You know, they had a nice little trio going during that Super Bowl run. And they also, Odell Beckham, working with him and making him an elite receiver. Especially, he's been very good after the catch over the course of his career. So, make no mistake about it, you know. While Tom Coughlin has his flaws, the receiver department is an area that he, just like Dave Caldwell, has flourished in scouting and coaching as well. So, I mean, the crazy thing about it is, like, people praise Tom Coughlin for being kind of a quarterback whisperer when the fact of the matter is his track record with receivers is better than quarterbacks, you know? So, I mean, in this case, that's a good thing for the Jaguars. I mean, because obviously we're talking about this because the receiver area is an area of concern. And I think, you know, just all of that, you know, his knowledge of the position and Dave Caldwell's knowledge of the position basically puts the Jags in good hands, in my opinion. So I guess ultimately time will tell. Like I said, training camp's coming up in under a week. We'll be there covering it with Jacob as well. Hopefully he'll be able to join us like he did last year. And, you know, we'll be definitely watching that position and how they fare at the receiver position, because coming into the mix, you know, they have momentum. They look very good in OTAs. They look very good at minicamp. And, you know, nonetheless, you know, that's going to be a key department for the Jags' success heading forward, especially under new offensive coordinator John DeFilippo. So next we're going to get into the Madden ratings. As I said, for Madden NFL 20, Jaguars were rated a 79 overall. And I'm going to pull up the list real quick. I think that makes them like the seventh worst team if you're going from the bottom. So we got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yep, exactly. It was the seventh worst team with a 79 overall. And they were rated at 82 on defense, 71 on offense, which probably hurt their average. That 79 overall, that probably is what hurt them the most. So, you know, of course, a lot of Jaguars fans have been up in arms about it, including myself. I didn't think Madden graded them fairly or well on this equation. But the thing about Madden is, as of lately, the last 8 years, their rating system has been kind of critical. So, I mean, a lot of teams aren't where they should be. I mean, you look at the overall ratings, right? I mean, you got the Patriots as an 87. You know, back in the day, they easily a 90. Easily a 90. The Packers are 87. Back in the day, they, you know, by the grading scale they used back then, easily would have been a 90. So now the Madden is just, I don't know exactly how they do this, but all I do know is, you know, the grades are super critical regardless of what team you are. But that's especially a case for a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, you know, are kind of one of the lesser known teams, even in 2017's run, you know. A lot of people didn't know a lot about them. So that being said, in terms of the overall rating, I think the Jaguars definitely could have been higher. I would say, I'm looking at the list in here, you know, they got the Broncos at 81. You could have easily put the Jaguars there, especially with Nick Foles. Like, what's the difference in the teams? They got veteran quarterbacks that, you know, in that 30-year-old age range in Flacco and Foles, who, you know, are probably pretty much on the same level. I think Foles is probably a little bit better than Flacco. They both got elite defenses, and they both got questionable offenses, you know. So I don't understand how they're not rated up there with the Broncos, at least on this rating scale. You can argue that the Broncos would be higher too, but again, Madden's kind of critical. Then you see, like, the Ravens, 81. Let's keep going up here on the list. The Seahawks, 81. Titans, 81. Yeah, you can look at a lot of these teams and say, hey, they could have been better. But the Jaguars at least should have been in that 81. You got the 49ers at an 83. Jags could be in that range somewhere, even on this scale that Madden uses. So, I mean, it is what it is, I guess. And, I mean, the good thing about it is now with video games in the video game community is, like, you have downloadable content. So over the course of the regular season, of course, Madden will update ratings And the Jaguars, of course, can climb the rating scale over time in the regular season. But to start off the game, they weren't done any favors, so to speak. So I look at that rating, that 79 overall, and I scratch my head. But it is what it is for right now. The 71 on offense, like I said, that really hurt them. That's a little low for the Jags, in my opinion. Last year, yeah, sure, if you're looking at last year, you know, they struggled mightily. But a lot of that, again, was because of the injuries that decimated the offensive line. Four guys on IR from the starting offensive line. Leonard Fournette out for, what, half of the season. That year wasn't telling of what the Jaguars really are on offense. You go a year back after that in 2017, even with the inconsistency of Blake Bortles, you know, they were a respectable offense, much better than the 71. So I think, like, Madden should have graded them off of what they would have been as a healthy unit. And I think what they did is they did the complete opposite. They graded them and rated them off of last year when they were decimated with injuries. But again, with downloadable content, you should be able, or we should see an increase in that if the Jaguars offense is serviceable and they can be what, you know, we think they'll be. Now, as for the individual ratings, and I guess I'll start by, before I even get into that, talking about the X factor abilities. Now, they're bringing these abilities back into the game. And I say back into the game because if I recall, and I haven't played or owned a Madden in like roughly 5 years, I kind of took a break from it. Especially when, like I said, when the rating system kind of got a little bit more critical. But that being said, they did used to have like X Factor players, if I can recall, back in the day. Don't know like how long ago that was, but they're bringing it back. And the Jaguars have two X Factor players who ironically are their two top rated players, in Jalen Ramsey, who's a 96 overall, and Calais Campbell, who's a 92 overall. If I'm not mistaken, those were their ratings from last year as well. So they didn't decline. They didn't necessarily increase in the ratings there, which I guess you could say that's a good or a bad thing. But they'll have the X factor abilities for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I'm sure it might be teams with more X factor players. But for now, we'll just say you can have up to two at least based off the Jaguars X factor players per team. So for Jalen Ramsey, he has a shutdown X factor ability. And I'm reading it off of Jaguars Wire here, which that basically allows him to provide tighter coverage than others and snag interceptions during contested catches. To activate it, players will need to force two incompletions with Ramsey or pick off a quarterback. In other words, you probably need to get a user pick. And for the opposition to deactivate that X factor ability, they will need to gain at least 30 offensive yards after the ability is triggered. Now, for Calais Campbell, his X factor ability is called the unstoppable force ability, which will allow him to shred blocks quicker, regardless as to how a player chooses to rush with Calais, the quarterback, or rush the quarterback with Calais. Once the ability is activated, Calais, he'll basically win most of his one-on-one matchups, if not all of them. But that's only while the X-Factor ability is activated. So to activate it, the user will need to get a total of two sacks with him, two user sacks. They say three in competitive gaming or competitive games, a.k.a. when you're playing against a friend. And then two deactivated opponents will need to gain 10 yards on the offensive end. So that's some interesting stuff there. You know, those are kind of some game changer abilities that can help, if you will, kind of change the tide of the game or change the momentum of the game. If you're down or even if you're up, you know, it can help you maybe even increase the lead or get a crucial sack that you need to close the game or whatever the case may be, a crucial pick in Jalen Ramsey's case. But that is interesting to say the least. I'll definitely be looking into that and looking for gameplay on it. And if I find some gameplay with the Jaguars and the X Factor abilities, I will be putting that on the Jaguars Wire for you all to view. And, you know, see what we looking like in terms of the actual gameplay in itself with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So in terms of the player ratings, from top to bottom, and I'm just going to name all of the, I think it was the top 17 that I put on the Jaguars Wire. And I'm going to stop with 17 because that's where basically Nick Foles is ranked. He's the 17th rated, highest rated player on the Jaguars. So starting from the top 96, as I said, Jalen Ramsey is the highest rated player on the roster, as well as the highest rated cornerback in the game. So that's a nice little tidbit to have by your side. And not only that, you know, he was just 3 points away from the 99 club, which a lot of people will argue he should have been, or at least closer to it, maybe 97, 98-ish. But, I mean, like, when you're a 96, it's not really that much of a discrepancy between you and the players in that, in terms of the gaming mechanics, in my opinion at least. And, again, I haven't played a Madden in forever, but at least the last I've played Madden, it's not that big of a discrepancy between the 96 and those that you see in the 99 club, in my opinion. But that's just me. Calais Campbell was rated a 92, as we already discussed. A.J. Boye, 88. Telvin Smith, 88. As we all know, he's going to be taking the season off, at least, you know, that's what it's looking like right now. But he's still in the game nonetheless because they haven't put him on the retired list. Brandon Linder and Andrew Norwell with an 86 and 85 respectively. So those are two offensive linemen right there to keep in mind that are over the 85 or, you know, at the 85 rating level, which, you know, you can maybe run the ball well with if by going between those guys with Leonard Fournette. Yannick Ngakoue, 84. I guess I'll stop there real quick. He got snubbed, in my opinion. I think that's where he was last year, or he might have been at 82, but it was somewhere in that ballpark. He definitely should have been higher. By comparison, like I said, you're looking at guys like A.J. Boye and Telvin Smith, who got 88s. I think Ngakoue probably could have been there, maybe in the 87 range by this grading scale, this rating scale, at least in my opinion. But I think Madden really held his abilities against the run against him. Although he was better against the run than people give him credit for, at least in 2018. So I think he should have improved a little bit or had a better rating. But yeah, he's one of the guys that stand out to me as a guy that could have been rated better in this game. Miles Jack is below him, 83. Leonard Fournette at 81. You know, Leonard might complain with that, but at the end of the day, like, you miss eight games, you miss what, four before that, so, or roughly four before that. So I mean, availability is the best ability, and I guess in his case they can't really find the proper rating for him because he's not been on the field. So I mean, I don't see why fans would complain with that, or he would complain with it, but yeah, that's neither here or neither there. Marcell Dareus at an 80 got absolutely just snubbed there. He definitely should have been along the lines of, I think, at least 85 with Linder and Norwell, that 85, 86 range. But I don't understand as to why, you know, he's rated that low, especially at the nose tackle position. He played some quality football for the Jags last year against the run and as a pass rusher. So I don't understand his rating. Maybe, you know, they'll have some evaluators come out and maybe change it. You know, EA is down the road in Orlando, so, you know, they can send guys like that to Jacksonville. But I guess we'll see. And by comparison, look at this, man. Marquise Lee is an 80 at the wide receiver position. So, like, you mean to tell me, like, Marquise Lee is on the same level as a player as Marcell Dareus? I don't get that personally, but again, you know, Madden is weird when it comes to this stuff. Josh Lambeau, 79 overall. D.D. Westbrook, 79 overall. Should have probably been in that 80 to 82 range, in my opinion, because he made significant progress, as we talked about, as a receiver last year. Jake Ryan with a 78. Josh Allen with a 77. We talked about him on the article about the rookie ratings, which were revealed before the player ratings, the veteran ratings, if you will. Keelan Cole, 77. And then, like I said, last but certainly not least, Nick Foles with a 77, who probably should have been. That's another issue I got with this, is Nick Foles at least put him in the 80s, at least where Dareus is, or put him in that 81 to 82 range somewhere, based off, I mean, what we've seen him do in the end of the regular seasons for the Philadelphia Eagles the past 2 years, and in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. He, you know, he's worthy of better than that, at least if you're basing it off his last 2 years of play. But there you have all of the ratings and, you know, my takes on who was kind of snubbed. In terms of the attributes, I guess we'll talk about that a little bit here. We'll hit the speed tab here. And see who's the speediest player. DJ Chark, no surprise there. 94 overall. D.D. Westbrook was right behind him with a 93 overall. And then they have Zedrick Woods, who we got. That's the safety we got undrafted out of, Ole Miss this year. Went to school like 70 miles away from the Jaguars facility at Lake City, if I'm not mistaken. So he's, you know, Florida native, but he was rated a 93. And I think that's fair because I think he ran like a 4.3 at the combine. He was one of the fastest guys there. Chris Conley with a 92, no surprise there. He maybe could have been 1 point higher or 2 points higher, but that's roughly about what you would expect. Fournette with the 92. That's, you know, I mean, Fournette is, he has speed, good speed for his size, but I think he's more of an acceleration guy. And then you got 92 for Jalen Ramsey in the speed department. So in terms of the acceleration, let's see what we got here. Who's the top rated in that department? AJ Boye has the highest acceleration in terms of attributes with a 94. DJ Chark got a 93 behind him. Ramsey with a 93. And then some unknown guys, if you will. Breon Borders and kind of, well, I guess you could say Cody Davis is kind of unknown, an unknown guy in the backfield there. They both got 92s. Agility. In terms of the agility, let's see here. We got D.D. Westbrook leading the way with the agility, 94 in that category. D.J. Hayden, as a nickelback, that makes sense that they gave him solid agility, 93. Marquise Lee with a 92. Quentin Meeks with a 92. A.J. Boye with a 91. It makes sense that all of these guys, you know, Trey Herndon, 91, are cornerbacks. Typically, you know, those are the guys that lead the way in agility on this game. And then lastly, strength, definitely as I expected. Marcell Dareus with a 94. Taven Bryan, surprisingly, still got that 93 from last year that he had as a rookie, which is higher than Calais Campbell, who's the next man with a 92. So that's what it's looking like in terms of the attributes. Cannot wait for Madden to come out. This is the first one, like I said, I've owned in about, or I will own. I haven't even pre-ordered it yet, but it's the first one I have or will own in the past about 5 years. So I'm kind of excited about it and to see the new features, the new X Factor features. I know last year they had the whole thing where you can come out of high school or college. I think this year is college that you can be a college prospect and get drafted. So I'll definitely be checking that out as well. But nonetheless, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily like to talk about Madden in terms of connecting it with the actual real football realm, but nonetheless, Madden is such an important part of football. I mean, for crying out loud, like, millions of people play it, but I just felt the need to talk a little Madden because, believe it or not, a lot of our readers are Madden players and, you know, give my takes and shoot my shots on that. So that being said, we're going to wrap it up here for episode, I think we're at episode 43. Don't quote me on that. At this point, they're all running together. But feel free to check us out. As I said earlier in the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom with our comrades on the USA Today Network. We'll have this episode up there for you to look at, and many, many others leading up to this point. Hopefully we can get Jacob and Phil in on the next episode. We'll probably try and do one in 2 more days. Like I said, with training camp coming up, we need to get more frequent with this. I'll get with Jacob and Phil on that. And again, like I said, we're going to try and give you some live training camp coverage, me and Phil and hopefully Jacob, as training camp nears. And that will be once again on Thursday. So all of that said, we're going to wrap it up for the Jazz Den podcast. And until next time, everyone be safe.